relaxing times. Make it Suntory time.
カットカットカットカット。時間がないんだよ。ね、パッションが。カメラテンション上げて。
With intensity.
Is that everything? It seemed like you said more than that.
Mr. Bob Harris. よう来たな、ボブ。
You are a movie star.
Yes,
movie
I should be doing movies.
Yeah, you know Rat Pack?
Rat Pack?
Rat Pack.
A ring a ding ding.
Mr. Harry, Mr. Kazuo sent me my stocking. Lip them.
What?
Hey, lip my stocking!
Lip them? What? What are you doing?
My husband's a photographer, so he's here working. He wasn't doing anything, so I came along.
What do you do?
I'm not sure yet, actually. What are you doing here?
Getting paid $2 million to endorse a whiskey. The good news is the whiskey works.
Help! Can you keep a secret? I'm trying to organize a prison break. We'd have to first get out of this bar, then the city, and then the country. Are you in or are you out?
I'm in.
How are you? I'm Bob.
You're probably just having a midlife crisis. Did you buy a Porsche yet?
You know, I was thinking about buying a Porsche.
I just don't know what I'm supposed to be.
You'll figure that out. The more you know who you are and what you want, the less you let things upset you.
You really are having a midlife crisis, huh?
Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to Waffle On Podcast. My name is Simon Meddings.
I'm Mark Kelly.
And once again, we're doing this over Skype due to obvious restrictions, Cal.
Yeah. But do you know what? I can't even remember. How many times in the last year have we done this face-to-face? Once.
Well, I think we did January and February. And then I think we did... I think we did one in the middle. Then there was one on Skype. And then we did... I think maybe the April one. Maybe we did it face-to-face.
There was one where it sort of went back normal. We had about a normality for about 3 weeks, didn't we?
And I think so.
We did one, didn't we?
And it's only now, nearly a year into it, that I've almost worked out how to get good sound on it. It's a bit annoying. But at least our loyal listeners, Kel, haven't complained, which is jolly nice. I think everyone knows what the situation at the moment isn't the greatest. The only noise I've got going on in the background is I've got the bread machine going, which thinking
I've
about
I've
it...
I've looked at that. How many Waltons?
Well, if it was the Waltons, I'd have the wife behind me making the bread. But no, it's in dough setting mode at the moment, so it should theoretically kick off. But there we go. So we've got a couple of things to talk about before we get into our main subject. And Kel, what is our main subject today?
Our main subject is Lost in Translation.
And so that our good listeners know, what is our subject next month?
It is the Lady Killers.
The original Lady Killers as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I haven't saw it. I thought I had in my life, so I'm quite looking forward to watch it.
Oh, that's really good because this is one of my favourite Ealing comedies. And it's the first Ealing comedy to be made in colour. But we'll talk about that next month, most definitely on Skype again. So we talk about Lost in Translation, but before we talk about that, both me and you have got three TV things to talk about. This is going to contain spoilers. We're not going to talk about it a lot because we're going to dedicate one of these things to a separate podcast. But, Kel, I've just caught up on WandaVision.
I told you, though, didn't I? Amazing. You think it's amazing?
Yeah.
I said to you, didn't I, right? You could easily have got them first three episodes, think, I can't be bothered anymore. Because lots of people give up on it, isn't that? Oh, what's this? But the way they work them three episodes into them two episodes after is amazing, isn't it? And little bit is explained, isn't it?
I tell you what amazes me with Marvel, right, and the creators of Marvel, and kudos to Disney as well, is the fact that their planning of episodes and films. I read something yesterday that apparently within the Marvel Universe, the MCU films, they were planning various things as they went along and was putting little things in each film. When you go back and watch it, you see it. And apparently, now, I only looked this up just this morning, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
There is in the last Spider-Man film, Far From Home. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yeah.
It's quite a good movie. There's a bit where Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury is on the plane. No snakes on it, just him. And on the screen on the side is a hexagon.
What?
Now, you're looking at it, and loads of fans are going, you know, Marvel fans, like any kind of fandom, they look into things and they spot things, and you get there going, is that real? Or is that just cute? You know, just sort of like, just he's actually there for no apparent reason. But there's a hexagon on there, because loads of people are saying, no, that's why it's called the hex. It's actually a hexagon, all kind of thing going around it. But I then went and did a bit of research on the comics, and a lot of this comes from 1977 to 1983. Comic series that came out, and so I looked it up earlier on, and you know on the trailer or on the opening thing where you see them dressed up for Halloween and they're wearing their versions of the costumes, they're actually wearing the versions of the costumes from 1977.
Oh, right.
So, which is a real good nod to it. But I think the whole thing is, and I love Elizabeth Olsen. I think she's an absolutely cracking
actress. You know, Paul Bettany's a brilliant actor, but she steals every scene she's in that thing.
Well, do you think as well, though, that, I mean, obviously she's good directing, good writing, that Bettany's character, up until probably episode 3, episode 4, he's really sort of like in the background, he's the comedy foil, until he starts thinking something's going on. And then, in that one scene, I mean, this is spoilers, so I do apologise.
Oh, you can't talk without spoiling it. You just can't.
Does that scene where you see Vision dead, where he's just standing there with a hole in his head, and you're there going, that's, what's going on, man? That is proper weird. It really is.
One thing I like about it is like, there's that, as it goes on, there's that scene all running through, there's just complete sadness and loss, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's all about, isn't
it? It's all about
severe grief. That last one. Yeah. She explained what she's doing it for, that she can't give up, and she's lost it. That bit with the dog, isn't that?
Yeah. But the fact that they find the dog, the kids get older, and the dog dies in the same day. You're meant to think it's a week. And the fact that this is only 9 days,
because
they say she stole Vision's body 9 days ago, and you're there going, what? What's going on here? This is absolutely weird. I think it's fabulous. And also, looking back on some of the making of stuff, they consulted with Dick Van Dyke, right, to how to get the authenticity of the 1950s through the Dick Van Dyke Show.
They had a
chat with him to get all this authenticity. The 60s and 70s were, of course, I Dream of Jeannie. When you notice the subtleties of it, where she's doing the kind of like the nose kind of thing and all that. I think all that is absolutely brilliant. The only thing I will complain about, let me give a positive thing again. Great to see that the girl doctor come in, who was also... We first saw her in the Thor film. So she's followed up through, which is a great thing. Why do you always have to have a dickhead of a person in charge? Do you know what I mean? Why do you always... The FBI guy, Mr. Wu, he's cracking. He's really good. Again, he's in. He was in the previous Marvel stuff. But then you got this bloke who goes, take the shot. And you go,
everything's got a lot of depth in it and like a bit ambiguity. Apart, they always do it where they have the shield guy or sword guy, and he's always like that, isn't it? It's like a bloody white guy who's a bit of a jarhead, isn't he? I wish to change that, because that bit was that I thought exactly the same. I thought that's too obvious him being like that, isn't it?
It really is obvious, and kudos here to Doctor Who, in which the one of the leaders of UNIT at one point was a bit like that. But at least they changed that. They changed it from being a stereotypical white male to a female black actress.
I
thought that was a good move because, you know, that takes it away from stuff. And it's just like, well, hold on a minute. If you're working for S.W.O.R.D., surely you're in this thing to understand stuff slightly weird, not just sort of like, you know, do all that. So I can't wait for next Friday's episode. Looking forward to that.
And especially like, you know, spoiler, that Quicksilver.
Quicksilver turning up.
What the hell's all that about then? What's that?
Well, does it, I mean, I own all the Marvel films on DVD, but I mean, the great thing about having Disney Plus is you can watch them. And I think I said to you that they, again, I know we've moaned about Disney about being a bit of a, this, you know, massive corporate bloody thing, at least they are giving content which is fabulous, and that's all you want from a corporation, and thank you for doing it. But also what they've done, these little nods, is that you can watch the MCU. They've put it in timeline as well.
Yeah.
Which is, in my mind, you know, otherwise you've got to go for Wikipedia, work hard on them. Is he Captain Marvel first? Is he Captain America first? No, he's Captain America first. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, no. Like I said, that scene in it, the magic show, has been my favourite scene in a TV show this year so far.
Yeah.
It was so well done. And, I mean, it was like a brilliant comedy scene. But someone was saying online about it on Twitter, saying that, even the jokes when the audience is laughing, the canned laughter, they're still, it's not that funny. And that's the darkness of it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Some of the jokes are terrible. And the way they're all, and like that end bit as well, where she's trying to end the show.
Yeah.
And it's just carry on talking. And it's, and he goes that thing, because you can't control me, you can control everyone else.
Yeah.
And that bit was so well done. And you thought, all right. Because even he doesn't know where he is either. That's the sad thing, isn't it?
He has no memory of how he's got there, but there must be something knowing out his vision. Do you know what I mean? It's very weird. Apparently the studio bits, are filmed in front of a live audience. Now, I don't know how they've done that and whether that's true or not, because unless it was filmed, I presume this was filmed before COVID, because apparently Winter Soldier one with...
Falcon and Winter.
Yeah, Falcon was meant to come out before this, but because of their filming schedules, they couldn't do it. Our other one, because we are quite conscious that we care that we could keep talking, and we only have an hour. We got Mandalorian as well. Now I've watched all of Mandalorian, and you was doing a very unusual for you. Yeah. You was doing a very very slow catch up because you wanted something to look forward to in these shitty times.
Anyway, I'm sort of like, I think I was about 2 years behind. I'd heard like everyone saying how amazing it was, but I sort of my luster had
you right?
My luster had walked off. It's sort of worn off with Star Wars because I enjoyed them last few films, but I'd come out and an hour later, I'd particularly forgot about them. I saw, and then, you know, the prequels left me cold, and it sort of, I thought, oh, I've grew out of Star Wars, and then everyone can, I thought, I was going to do it for Christmas, and from that first 10 minutes, like, everything took me back to being bloody 11, and I haven't had that in a TV show. I can't remember the last time I had that. Maybe when Star Trek come back, when Next Gen, when I was a kid and that come back. But it's like, what? And to me, it's the best Star Wars I've saw since the original film I saw in 1984.
Oh, really?
I'd even maybe put it above the Star Wars films. For me, for an enjoyment. I haven't enjoyed a TV series so much in years. And I mean, a few little bits, I suppose I could be picky about it, like you can be everything. Mm-hmm. But these are minor. But my God, the heart in that thing. And that last bit, meant when I watched the last episode, the bit where when he took his mask off at the end and bloody and Gorgu put it, I was nearly crying. And I haven't had an emotional response in TV show like that. I can't remember where every time Gorgu come on, and that last bit, it was so sad. I don't give a shit, people, but it's like animals and robots I cared about. But it got me, hit me, such a gut punch at the end, and how sad he looked at the end,
yeah.
Mando. And you wanted him to get that little, you know what? I wanted him to get that little metal ball out. I was thinking, where's the little metal ball?
Yeah, I think he's got that. I think he has it. I mean, the whole thing of him taking his helmet off there was just a pure show of respect to the Jedi and to go as well. I think, I mean, you did really well. Really well.
To stay away from spoilers.
Because that end thing, I mean, I deliberately watched it because I kind of knew something was building up. I didn't know what. I didn't have a clue what it was. And even when I was watching it and I saw the X-Wing flying in, and I was there going, it's a Jedi X-Wing. And you know, when you're in the back of your head, you're thinking, is he set after Jedi? It ain't going to be Luke because fact that, you know, Mark Hamill's a lot older now. But then when he's walking along and you're thinking, is this what's going on? And then as soon as the green lightsaber was like, and he started doing some crazy Jedi shit, and also quite dark Jedi stuff as well.
Yeah.
But my God, and apparently that was Mark Hamill was there as well. And Mark Hamill knew about that. He was on set. He was doing it all. He did the walkthrough of it all and did all the talking and stuff like that. What wicked CGI as well. Now, I know that people have knocked the Rogue One, but I mean, that was quite a few years ago now. Do you know what I mean? But I was like, this is the right time. I disagree with using this kind of face stuff with actors who have passed away.
Yeah.
I don't like that because I don't think it's... Even if the family said okay, but yeah, the fact that Mark Hamill's there going, yep, I'm happy with this, here we go, let's rock, to me adds that extra kind of...
Yeah. I was going to say to you, because I haven't watched the making bit of it yet, was that someone standing there and then mapped his face, or was it a whole figure that was a CGI...
There's no making of the second series on.
Right.
I believe.
To know, was it a person there? And
no, it was. There was an actor who did it all. Who there? But apparently, Mark Hamill was there and did the walk as well. So he did the kind of walk up to get the reactions of the characters, I believe. So he took the hood off and he stood there and he did the words, and so they got the reactions of like Mando and all the other people, and then they did the Mark Hamill standing. And who did all the walk up then, so they could do the mapping of the yeah. And obviously it's a stunt man doing the lightsaber and stuff and all that.
It's one of my only little critique of it was, like, all in these things, to build up these dark troopers. Yeah. Generally, they're pretty shit in there.
Oh, yeah, you could just
get them out there, yeah, like, pretty robotic. It's like,
what was that robot? Was it Maximilian?
Yeah, like...
You might realise the little Maximilians.
Yeah. Like, they build them up. They're these mad things, right? They can do... But basically, what did they do? They could fly somewhere.
Yeah.
They could fly somewhere out. That one was really tough when he was fighting Mando. I thought, but the others were actually pretty crap, really.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think there's something more sinister about troopers who are people. A bit like Nazis at the end of the day. You know that SS people are proper nasty because they're humans. And the stormtroopers, whether you want to go along the Clone Wars route or the stormtroopers are clones, whatever. But did you really like the bit where it cuts to Jabba the Hutt thing and you got the fat bloke? Who's got fat now, sitting on the throne. Oh, I love that. That book was amazing.
How good is that book of Boba Fett going to be? It's like, what? Do you think you're going to see how he got out the pit? They've got to show that, ain't they?
I suppose they could do. I mean, it is written the fact that he was able just to fly out.
Why didn't he have his armour? Was he just like nude?
Well, I suppose that's all the story, isn't it? Because it's sort of like, you know, and that's built up again for the book of Fett. I'm sure you're going to find stuff to it. But the fact that he's a bit of an anti-hero. He's an even good thing. I mean, it's always great to see Tamura Morrison on screen in my mind. I've been a huge fan of him since his early days in New Zealand.
Warriors, weren't it?
Yeah, and he did a small film in 1984 with my old friend John Clark. And I just love it. I just love his acting.
And like I said, I like that. I hope they're going to keep Boba Fett. Like, I hope they're going to Mando him. Because, like, Mando started off a bit of a git, and then as he got on, he, like, humanised him. Mm. I hope they do keep Boba Fett. That actually is a bit of a git, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
honourable. Yeah. He's honourable.
But he's a bounty hunter.
But he's a bounty hunter.
Besides, so we've got the Book of Fett coming out first, and then there's Mandalorian Series 3 after that.
So they are still doing another Mandalorian?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, obviously, this is all subject to change. At the time of... disclaimer. At the time of recording, it is right. So we've also been watching Lower Decks. I've watched all of them now.
I'm on five. I did a couple last night. It's really good, isn't it? I know you love it, don't you?
I was like you because it was a bit of a it's cartoon. But once you realise it's like Family Guy. Simpsons American Dad. You're sort of watching that, and the fact that people say, you know, fuck this and all this kind of stuff in it, I really, really got into it. I got into a bit of a conversation on the interwebs about someone was talking about disco and the fact, and I was there going, I know that apparently they explain the burn. I couldn't tell you. I could not explain it to you. Maybe I just weren't concentrating, which I probably weren't during disco, if I'm honest with you.
Some bloke shouting, weren't it?
It's just some geezer shouting. I don't know why.
Yeah. But
the fact is that I simply don't know. Like, me and you've had this conversation. Yeah. We won't dwell on it. But the fact that I don't know hardly any of the characters.
Nope.
I just can't connect with that program for some reason. Don't get me wrong, but I enjoy watching it.
Like it
comes up. But for Lower Decks, I was there going, man, I haven't felt like this since TNG. It might be because of the fact that it's filmed TNG style with the titles and the credits kind of thing. He's a bit very TNG-ish.
Yeah. Even they use the same font at the end on the credits.
Exactly. Now, I'm not going to say anything, but you really need to hurry up and watch it so I can talk to you tomorrow at work about the last episode.
But I love that Rutherford in it. There's like, you know, Rutherford is a better character than any in Discovery.
Absolutely.
I love him in it. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's great. So that's our three things that we like wanted to quickly bring up. And I think we did quite well in that, Cal, around about 18 minutes. I'm going to make a note of that so I can say to the listeners, skip on 20 minutes. If they don't want to be spoiled. Because a lot of podcasts do that, but we don't. So, Cal, we're talking about Lost in Translation. What do we do before we talk about it?
You play one of the songs from the soundtrack?
Mm-hmm.
What one?
We have played Just Like Honey by Jesus and the Mary Chain.
I love that record.
Which I think is quite apt because it's in the trailer and it is. But we did send out a little bit of a request for anybody to get in touch with us about comments-wise.
Yeah.
Ironically, we got more comments once we had to postpone it due to Skype technical difficulties. But I'm going to read those out now, Cal, before we actually crack on with it. So, this is from Lucy Bloxby. Now, Lucy is a good friend of the show. She does the Rick Mayall scrapbook on Twitter and I think she's on Instagram as well. So if you're a mad fan of Rick Mayall or the comic shook and Aid Edmondson, please look out for or type in your search engine for Rick Mayall scrapbook. And Lucy says this. Hi, I've just watched Lost in Translation. Yes, a very interesting film. I was drawn in right from the start. Bill Murray is very captivating, as is Scarlett Johansson. I felt such a lot of empathy for both characters who are obviously lost and lonely. Both two lost souls that found a connection and understood each other and their different loneliness. We will never know what was said at the end, that was their private intimate moment, or whether they will ever see each other again. That's something we don't need to know. The film left me knowing that these two people shared a bond and a lovely connection during a difficult period of their life. Perfect comment. Thank you, Lucy.
That'd be better than our bloody podcast, to be honest.
I think it was. Actually, these are better. So, turn off after this. This is from a friend of mine, Nadine, in Australia. She put this on Facebook. I absolutely love this movie. One of my favourites. I watched it again recently and loved it just as much. The subtlety of it is beautiful. And then we had these last three comments there. Pete Foltz. This is a film that grew on me. At first, I was ambivalent after seeing it in the theatre. But after giving you some thought, the storytelling really appealed to me. That's quite nice to know. Grant Kerno said, this film really was lost on me. I rewatched it after I saw the rave reviews because I thought I'd missed the point and the subtlety in their performances. But I was still left scratching my head trying to work out what the point of the film was. So enlighten me, lads. Well, that's fair dinkum. So hopefully, Grant, after we've waffled on about it, we'll enlighten you. I'm going to have a slurp of my coffee because it is early in the morning.
I think that's fair enough because, you know, this is a bit of a left turn for Waffle On, isn't it? We thought we'd do maybe this year try and do other tones of films because we can get caught into doing things that we love, which generally are violent and horror and comedy. So I thought we've been doing it for 10 years now. There's 11. Another array of, yeah, 11 years. There's an array of films out there, and it'd be nice to do some other tones for other people who listen to his podcast who don't really like super violent, super, you know, cutting stuff. And, it, you know, I can understand why it ain't everyone's cup of tea, because I think that's right. It's a film about nothing, really. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we have decided that. I mean, last year, because last year was such a terrible year for everybody, I think we kind of, we ended up doing podcasts that we needed sort of to pick ourselves up with, didn't we? We wanted to talk about stuff that made us happy in a happier time. And well, it's our show, we can do what we want. But as you said, you came up with some cracking ideas about us moving the podcast forward into doing some unusual films, still films that obviously we've always said we will never do films we're not passionate about at all. That's not on our remit. There's no, we're not going to pick a film we haven't, well, we might pick a film we haven't seen and both of us watch it. That might be a good idea. Anyway, we got another one here, and I had to get in touch with this chap because he's from Ireland, he's in Dublin. And you know how I get really annoyed when I go to hotels and somebody calls me Weddings or Meadows or something like that?
Meadows,
and the last, the last thing I wanted to do was to say his name wrong. So this is from Senan Hoare, and he's in Ireland. He goes, love this movie, Billy Murray at his best. I've been to Japan a few times, and the movie captures so well the many weird, cute, strange, unique things about Tokyo. I love it and get something from every watch. Keep up the good work, guys, and always a big fan of the pod. Stay well, good night, and may your God go with you. Nice Dave Allen reference there. I love
Dave
that.
Allen,
So yeah, so we'll go into the waffly bits first. Now we're only going to talk about three people in this, because really there's only three people in it. We're not going to talk about Bill Murray, as you know, on Waffle On. We've talked about Bill Murray on Ghostbusters. So if you want to know more about Bill Murray, please do go back and listen to the show about Ghostbusters. Now this was written, directed, and produced by Sofia Coppola, an incredibly talented woman. Who has made her own direction in film, I think it's fair to say. Instead of jumping on the coattails of her father, I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit of a lift up there, but she has gone in her own direction, and I think she's one of the most... I also think she's, unfortunately, slightly forgotten a little bit. I think it's terrible. Everyone bangs on about... We're both big promoters of female filmmakers. There should be more of them. But yeah, there's been recently the wave of recent filmmakers. It's as if some people had never done it before. There was female directors back in the 1930s. And this is like Sofia Coppola. Everyone forgets that. She was one of the first people to not only bring out a film that broke the boundaries, but also didn't go along the way of boyfriend, girlfriend, because this is what is wonderful about this film. You are left wondering what is their connection. I should point out it's produced by Ross Katz as well. It came out on the 29th of August 2003 at the Film Festival, then September the 12th, 2003 in the States, April the 17th, 2004 in Japan.
We went to the cinema to see it, didn't we? I'm sure we did.
Yeah, we did. We went and saw it in 2003. Don't tell us when it came out in the UK, but I'm sure it was 2003. We saw it in Five Ways.
Yeah.
Remember? And then we went for drinks afterwards. At a budget of $4 million... and it made a box office of 118.7 million.
Bloody hell.
Which is a fabulous thing, considering the fact it was only, I believe, filmed in 27 days. Was also filmed, part of this film was done in secret, because they couldn't get the right permits to film in Japan. We all know
there's a lot of guerrilla filmmaking, isn't it?
There's a lot, including the crossroads section that was filmed in secret, and also part of the filming in when it's really raining, she's going across that beautiful courtyard. Yeah. That was done in secret as well. I'm sure he didn't mind, because I think he put Japan a little bit more on the box office of people wanting to go there. Now, Sofia was born Sofia Carmina Coppola on May the 14th, 1971 in New York City. She's also known as Domino Coppola. Obviously a film writer and filmmaker in her own right. This is our first film we're talking about, Scarlett Johansson, born November the 22nd, 1984 in New York. She's also got Danish citizenship. She's been acting since 1994. She was only 17 during the making of this film, 19 when it was released. You wouldn't know, frankly, that she's only 17. I mean, she looks bloody young in it, but her acting in this is just stupendous.
Yeah, because I always think that this character could be very irritating, really.
Mm.
If you step back and someone told you about this character, about the two characters in it, It'd sound really unlikable, wouldn't it? What, some rich girl, because she's a rich girl, isn't she? Getting to travel around the world, being in a 5-star hotel, husband's a photographer, but it's a bit of existentialism with her, isn't it? You know what I mean? I think sometimes you've got to take the character for what it is and not what you're prejudged. I'm like that with a lot of people, whether they're rich or poor or whatever, they've still got problems. And that's what she brings to it, is likableness to a really, really quite a spoiled brat who's got it all.
I think so, because there's parts in this film in which, you know, she mentions that she's been to Harvard, but she hasn't quite figured out what she's going to do. She's sort of philosophy, I think.
Yeah.
In this, there's a phone call with a mother who you can clearly see that the relationship isn't the greatest there. This is also based roughly, not exactly, but on Sofia Coppola's own life with Spike Jonze at the time, and the breakdown of their marriage, where she was traveling with him and him being a well-known film director. I think I've got it written down here, which I thought was quite apt, which I'll just read it out. This is from Lucy Bolton, who offers a feminist reading, arguing that Lost in Translation evokes the thought of feminist philosopher Luce Irigaray, by highlighting issues of young womanhood. She argues that the film provides a complex portrait of Charlotte's female subjectivity and an optimistic rendering of the character's beauty of individual expression. That, if anyone wonders what that watering sound was, that was my phone telling me I should drink water. Have a mind. And I think that is mainly because of the fact of the opening shot. Now, when anyone's younger, like when we was when we first saw this, the opening shot of a young actress who's bottom in lingerie, he's kind of like, hello. But as you get older when you watch it,
when we come out,
it was like, God, she's got a cracking bum, isn't she? As you get older, though, and you look into it and you become a little bit more sort of like, obviously we was, what, how old is this film now? Go to that, we were quite younger as well at this point. The fact is that apparently that shows the innocence of the person involved in this film. Sofia Coppola did that shot. She did the first take of that shot to put Scarlett Johansson at ease. When asked about it, she just said, I just like the idea of it. That's what her initial reaction was. It's actually based upon a very famous photographer's pictures who was well known for portraying of ladies in lingerie. Not necessarily in a sexualized way, in an innocent, fairly
kind of way. Yeah.
And I think looking at it now as a 47-year-old, you can see the innocence. That opening shot is sort of like, and because of the fact that it's still, for a hell of a long time, there's nothing going on.
No.
It just shows the pure innocence of somebody lying there. I think it's a great shot.
Yeah, and as well, there's a bit of a sadness to it as well, because you've got this beautiful young girl, and she's just in an empty room.
Yeah.
Just lying on the bed, doing nothing. She's sexualized. It's just lying there.
It could easily have been done that way. I think me and you talked about this the other week, about the fact that, if I think it's easier to talk about because the fact that it's a female writer and director.
Mm.
I think it would be a lot harder to talk about in modern day feelings if it was a male director of that, because you could almost assume that he's done that shot as a glorified art shot. But because it's done by a female director, and this is the reason why both me and you wanted female comments about this film, because it's always good to see a female comment. Did your good lady watch this with you or anything like that?
She did watch it with me.
What was her thoughts on that?
Like, I think she doesn't like Bill Murray, right?
No.
She doesn't like Bill Murray. But she said at the end of it, that's the favourite, that's the best thing she's ever saw Bill Murray in.
Yeah.
As we talk about later on. Mm-hmm. She liked it, but she said what she liked about it was it didn't show her being like super confident.
Yeah.
She said the problem with her, she's a lot of people in films, is all the young girls know everything they want to do in their life. They're all like really headstrong. And she liked the way that my wife was a bit like that when she was that age. That the fact is, she had the whole world on her plate. You know, she could have gone to university. She could have done she was doing a master's degree. They wanted her to go and do a PhD and all these things. And she didn't want to do anything. She didn't want to do. She just wanted to travel and do things. And she didn't know where she was. And she liked that part of it. That it wasn't that she was just, a young girl can be just as confused as a young man can be. And in the same way, because I think a lot of the time when you hear about women in films, young girls always having the only thing they're thinking about is men.
Yeah.
And it's not about that with her, is it? It's not about that. It's about herself, isn't it? And she does love a husband.
Yeah.
She does love a husband, but she doesn't know what to do with herself, does she?
No, she feels that she's being left out, and I think he's moving on. And throughout the whole of this film, even the connection in the bar between Bob and Charlotte, when they're looking at each other, and in the lift, you know, people say, oh, yeah, they're looking at each other, they're like, hey, no, they're not. In that lift, there's all Japanese people, and they're the only two American people who are taller, and they look at each other because they're the only people they've got. And that's the way throughout the whole of the film. And that lift scene, I think, is so, so incredibly important because they acknowledge each other. Now, I've done that, right? When I was in Singapore, the first time I went to Singapore, I walked off that plane and I was crapping myself, right?
Yeah.
This was like 2003 maybe, 2005. I'm not too sure when it was. 2005, I think. And I'd travelled before, obviously. I've been quite a few places, but I'd never been that far. And to a place which the language I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect. Of course, I should have realised that Japan, Singapore, you know, China, all these kind of places cater for everybody. That's how good they are. So, of course, there were signs that had English on there as well, but I didn't know. And I spent a lot of time walking around the airport desperately looking for somebody who might be a bit like me. A bit like when me and you first started school.
Yeah.
You're looking for something to, and that lift scene, I think, is absolutely perfect. The filming of this is at the Park Hyatt Hotel in Tokyo. And it's a beautiful looking hotel, though. I mean, what cracking views from her room.
Yeah. That is not a cheap hotel, is it? Because that's you think, why are they a bit miserable? They're in this luxury hotel.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give you what you want, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I remember being in, God, I feel like I'm name dropping places now, but we've all stopped in hotels, and to be fair, me and you, when we've done our podcasters meetup and that, we always say, we'll only sleep in it, we don't want the all singing, as long as the door locks,
yeah,
you're all right, you feel safe, great, and the bed hasn't got any dubious stains on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I stayed in Vegas, and I stopped in his hotel, and it was like Bob, when the curtains opened, I'm there going, I can control the curtains from my bed. Well, I can also get up and open them. Don't get me wrong, it's fabulous to see. It's fabulous to actually experience that kind of thing. But part of you goes, you know, I was still incredibly jet-lagged. And it didn't matter what luxuries were on hold for me. I couldn't shake off the jet lag. I really couldn't. And I think if you've ever travelled, I mean, both me and you have travelled quite far. We've all suffered from jet lag, and there's nothing worse.
It kills me. It puts me off. It puts me off now because I suffer insomnia anyway. So it just kills me. You have to get through it. And that's why I love that, the scene when he's coming from the airport and he's like really wrecked from sleep. And he's just like looking at Japan and it's all dreamy. And it's got all that My Bloody Valentine playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it's like, isn't it? You're in this amazing place. But all you want to do is, in that mad thing, you just want to go home.
Yeah.
Because you want to be back to being normal. And
I think as well, though, that the fact that if we went, like, it'd be different because you're going there on holiday, so you know you've got time to adjust and go. The fact that Bob's there because he's getting paid $2 million to do a whiskey commercial, which he doesn't want to do, and Charlotte is there because she doesn't have anything to do at home, so she's come along with her husband to, you know, kind of like, you know, to have something to do. Both of them actually don't want to be there, but they're not being able. Charlotte at least is being able to experience stuff around it, but she's having to do it on her own. And her innocence and her nervousness of it all is shone all the way through. As Bob, he just wants to get home, but there's an escape. He wants to escape as well from his married life because of the fact he's just talking about, you know, carpet and stuff like that, normality, which you automatically assume. You know, actors and actresses and singers, rock stars, all this, they have this kind of like ace life. But in reality, they've still got to go shopping. They've still got to choose a fridge. They've still got to choose doorknobs to put on there. They've still got to deal with a broken boiler. Do you know what I mean? And you forget about all this thing. And that's what I love about the kind of thing about this film, where you start to see normality creeping into people's lives that you think, man, you're getting paid $2 million. Yeah, but you still got to choose a carpet for your study.
Do you know what I mean? And you're still doing something that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's that thing as well, like you're on your own. And like any experience in life, most experiences are best shared.
Mm.
That's just the way it is. Like, you know, if you're, no, you know, because we always said, oh, it must be brilliant being a business traveller, flying around the world. But everyone I ever talk to who's done it hates it because you've been on holiday. You think in our head, because we're stuck in a factory, you think it must be amazing going to the airport. And but it's like, no, because you don't want to be there. And then you're thousands of miles away from, at least we can go home every night. You just want to stop, no matter what you are. You want to be home, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we've spoken, we know two people who do that. Barry at our work, who's had to go to Cologne shows, and he says, he's saying, Cologne, man, that must be out. You could go out in the bar. No, you're in the middle of an industrial estate, miles away from the centre. Yeah. And our friend Pete, who does guest stars on our podcast, he does travelling for marketing and stuff like that. And I always think, man, it must be great. Oh, I've got to go to so-and-so and doing this and that. But, of course, it's the same thing. It's going to an airport, having to sit down, waiting for people to come along, get on the plane, get off the plane, go to the hotel, and then have dinner on your own and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. It's quite a lonely experience. I mean, I'm sure after this pandemic has finished, the idea of being a travelling person at the moment must be absolutely awesome, thinking, you know what, I can't wait to travel. I love that there's a bit in this where... after the lift scene, Charlotte gets on the tube and goes to the Japanese shrine, and she mentions the marriage there. There wouldn't be a marriage at that place. But also on the tube, I think I said to you that when she's standing on the tube, there's a guy reading a manga magazine. Yeah. And that manga magazine he's reading is Ghost in the Shell.
That's pretty mad, that, isn't it?
Yeah, because she goes and plays it later on. And Barbie's in his hotel room, and he ends up watching a TV program. Is it a TV or program film? Of one of his old films. Now, I think, I don't know what that is. I think it's a Saturday Night Live sketch, because he looks quite young in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm presuming it's a Saturday Night Live thing he's watching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you think about the bit with the lady who visits his room and asks to...
Well, I tell you what, though, there's a weird thing in this film, because I think like, you think about it now, there's lots of little jokes in this about being foreign. I don't think they do anymore.
Yeah.
You know that bit where she can't say rip?
Rip. She says lip.
Now, in this modern world, I don't think you get away with writing that joke now.
You know what I mean?
Making fun of her accent. But he's not really. He's just a bit uncomfortable with it all, isn't he?
Well, I don't think it is making fun of it. It's the fact that it's...
I don't think it is. I'm saying, I just can't imagine a thing now where you'd be, like, doing people's voices. So it's like that bit where he's having the food, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it's, like, doing an impression of him. I thought you wouldn't get away with doing that in a film now. I just don't think you would.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that... I think it's terrible to think that, because who hasn't done that?
Yeah.
Who hasn't done that somewhere along their life? Whether it is wrong... But are you telling me that all the people, when we were younger, we went to a Chinese restaurant or to an Indian restaurant, so we haven't mimicked somebody? Of course you have. And if everyone does it, and you're a liar if you said you haven't, like, even in jest, even in impersonating somebody on a TV, if you say that you haven't done that, you're a liar, right? But that's what happens in real life. So what annoys me is then saying that we can't put that on film. Well, that to me is bullshit. It's saying that those things don't happen in life. You can't go around for it like that. People do say things they shouldn't do, whether it be intentional or unintentional. And I think that scene with the... I presume she's... now, this is the thing. I'm not sure. Is she a prostitute? Has she been sent by somebody? Or is she just a girl on the make who knows there's a famous person there and she comes up to the room?
Yeah.
It's not explained, that, is it? I don't think it needs to be explained.
No. And it's like... it's quite a funny scene, isn't it? Because they're rolling around on the floor. And it's like... It's one of them scenes you're thinking, you don't know how you shot that scene.
Yeah.
Because it seems so spontaneous, isn't it, the way he falls over.
Yeah. And they're actually going, oh, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me, Mr.
Yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm doing that impression. Yeah, yeah. There you go. But I love that, the way that he just looks so... It's almost like this has happened before.
Really, yeah.
And I'm sure, you know what? This is what I love about Sofia Coppola's writing, is the fact that I'm sure many, many famous actors have been in this situation where someone's tried to, you know, get him into bed or something, and then they can turn around and say, famous actor punches me or tries to seduce me or something like that, especially at the moment. And I love that little bit, I mean, well before the Me Too thing. I love this kind of way, and I'm sure it's happened to, probably more happened to female actresses as well. I love that. I think it's a real subtle.
And I'll tell you what I think as well, like, it's really weird. I forgot what his name is in this. Now, being a British person, it's quite hard to take anyone Bob Harris.
Whispering Bob Harris,
isn't it? That's all you can think of, isn't it?
I was trying to find something to put at the end. You know, I like to put some at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, you can put some Bob Harris, right.
I'm going to put Whispering Bob Harris introducing a band. I'm going to put that on there. What I noticed that it's very wet in Tokyo, isn't it?
Yeah, I think yeah. I tell you what, a lot. Yeah, the weather. You know, we got a friend Doi, who's a big Japan person, and she said that when she walked around on her own, it was just like that bit with Scarlett Johansson walking around on the tube, just completely lost with no one speaking to her. She said she's never felt so lonely in a packed area. Said because people said, you know, they've got the lowest English speak, which, you know, is right, and it was a why should everyone speak? Like, no, you just do it on your phone, couldn't you? That's the thing. It's like a pre-mobile phone time as well, isn't it? I think so innocent, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah, you don't just, you know, they've got fax machines at 4:30 in the morning coming through.
And she said it was just like that. And she said, just walking around thinking, I don't know what to do. Yeah. I can't speak to anyone. Can't eat anything. I don't know where I'm going. She'd never been so lost, but she actually found it quite fun.
I suppose it's quite liberating as well. It must be really hard. I mean, we know that Di's like a vegetarian as well. So I don't think Di eats... Maybe she eats fish now. I don't think she did then. Di, please correct us, or Rob, please correct us. But I sometimes like solo traveling. I must admit, because it's kind of like one of the things. Don't get me wrong, I love going with my family and my friends. But there's something quite liberating about solo traveling, because the only person you have to think about is yourself. But also saying that, I wouldn't want to be lost. Do you know what I mean? I can imagine me going to New York and getting on the wrong tube. Do you know what I mean? And ending up like in oh, what's he called? National Lampoon's Vacation. Oh, here's a thing for you. Sorry to jump back. In WandaVision, the neighbor's house is the house used in, I think it's Home Alone, I think. And the other house is the house used in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Amazing. They are brilliant. That's amazing.
That's a different waffle line. Now, we get to the photo shoot as well, where the director wants him to be a little bit like the Rat Pack. Sammy, ironically, with the Rat Pack, he does an impression, Bill Murray, as Bob, does an impression of Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. In fact, the only person at the Rat Pack to do the whiskey advert for... What's the whiskey on now? I did write it down. Suntory. The whiskey is Suntory Hibiscus, which I'll talk about in a bit because I've had it.
That's the best one, isn't it?
Yeah, he's Sammy Davis Jr. He's the only one to do Suntory whiskey. I love the fact of that, though, where the director's shouting at him and the woman says, more intense. And he's going, but are you sure that's all he said? Yeah. You know, and that's the pure, you know...
No, annoyance. I like the thing as well, where he goes, James Bond, right? He goes, Roger Moore, and he goes, I think of Sean Connery. And I wouldn't think of Sean Connery, because Sean Connery dressed up as a Japanese person, which they're never doing a Bond film these days.
and ironically enough, Sean Connery is also another actor who did whiskey commercials.
Yeah. But I love that. It's right. I mean, you've got Roger Moore. No, I think of Sean Connery.
I think of Sean Connery, now, Bob and Charlotte again see each other. Bob claps. Now, this is the thing when they're watching the jazz musician, I'd say, the woman singer, who, I think I said this to you the other day, is not an actress, she is actually a singer in real life.
That's
Sofia Coppola remembered her from a previous visit to Tokyo and asked her to be in the film. So it's hints of the reason why really she only sings the way through. But I love the fact that the way Bob claps is just with his fingers, just clicking his fingers in a very jazz kind of, almost taking a piss. Kind of thing. And that's the first time, again, they acknowledge each other. But bear in mind, they don't speak to each other. Bob and Charlotte do not speak to each other until 32 minutes into the film.
Yeah, and then, I tell you what's really well as well, because the scene with her, where he sleeps with her and you think, oh, what are you doing that for? He never actually looks interested, does he?
No, that's
the weird thing.
Yeah, I mean, we should say, you're on about the singer, aren't you?
Yeah. There's just something to do, isn't there? That scene's really weird.
I think it's something to break the monotony, and he probably has done this before. I think he's mentioned, didn't
that's
he?
That's what that's saying, isn't it? That's the life he lives, isn't it?
Yeah. And to get away from the mundanity of home life. But home life is, you know, whatever you say, it doesn't matter how happy you are, especially at the moment, like as we said, it's like, to quote another Bill Murray film, every day is like Groundhog Day at the moment. You know what I mean? You can see why people break it. Now, Charlotte's husband is called John, played by Giovanni Ribisi. A lot of people know him as playing Phoebe's brother in Friends. He's been in loads of films. Always sense
about now as well. Something very negative about him now. He's a very famous Scientologist.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Is he really? I was going to say there's something slightly unnerving about him at the best of times.
Tom Cruise convinced him to be a Scientologist.
The more I thought about it, the more I don't think Simon Pegg's a Scientologist.
No, I don't. After watching that thingy, I've watched a few things of him. I think he's back in England now. I think as long as you get away from LA, you're all right, aren't you?
I think so. Yeah, because there's not a lot to do in LA, is there? Apart from drive cars and try and get a job. Now, this bit where John and Charlotte are in the lobby and they see an actress called Kelly, who's played also by Anna Faris.
Isn't it? She's out of a script. That was a scream. Scary movie, isn't she?
Scary movie. Anna Faris, yeah. Now, a rumour, although Sofia Coppola says this is not true, so we have to go with Sofia's thing, is that this could be Cameron Diaz. He's meant to be her. But so that was the rumour that Sofia Coppola has said that he isn't. Because he is kind of that wacky kind of person, isn't it?
Annoying.
Slightly annoying, yeah.
Yeah.
Although you would.
Yeah.
just to bring the podcast back to its male chauvinistic point of view. we can't praise everything.
No, Emma there giving me a right scowl.
I was just saying, in fact, the funny thing is that I actually knew that Emma had walked in. That's the reason why I said it. although you know what, just jumping back to Cameron Diaz for a moment. You know, I've heard various things about her. She seems to be one of the most individual people I've ever known in Hollywood. She doesn't seem to give a damn, does she?
And disappeared from a lot of films for a long time, hasn't she?
As far as I knew, all she's done is actually turned around and went, you know what, I'm buggering off. And she's just gone surfing. And I thought to myself, you know what, fair play to you. You know, she doesn't seem to be somebody who's conforming to the stereotype of what you're meant to do. So you just said, you know what, fuck it, I want a fun time, I'm off to have a fun time.
I think someone like that as well. But I think my favourite actress at the moment is, really crappy people, a female actor. I hate that term.
I think it's actress. Really awkward, because I still say actress, because if I'm talking about an actor, especially at the moment where an actress has now become an actor, or somebody has now changed their sexual identity, Ellen Page is now Elliot Page.
Elliot Page now.
It can get quite awkward, so I just say actress just to cover the
board. Anyway, my favourite actress, I'd say Charlize Theron. And I like Charlize Theron like that, because she could have done, you know, very good-looking model, but she does really amazing, violent stuff. And they're doing that Mad Max sort of sequel about her now, aren't they?
She also as well, when I first saw her was in that Keanu Reeves film with Al Pacino, about the devil. What's he called now?
The Devil's Advocate. Yeah, Devil's Advocate, that's the ultimate hoo-ha film, that is.
That is definitely a hoo-ha film. And I remember seeing her thinking, you know, as you do, you go, she's quite but then she went away from that. She could easily have gone down that route of playing those characters, and bear in mind that actually her character in that is a very, very troubled, dark character.
She could have done the Jennifer Aniston route, couldn't she?
She could really do that, and she didn't. She went the opposite way. She turned around and said, no, I'm in control of the thing. And I think people forget, again, it's another one of the things that we were saying earlier on, how people forget about these other actresses, these other female producers and directors who have done a hell of a lot more, but haven't been recognised for it because it was in the past. It's now, because it's like everyone's having to concentrate on it, rightly so, they forgot about it. I think some people need to be shown about that.
I agree.
Anyway, we find out that Charlotte has been married for 2 years. Now, I think she's meant to be 23 in this. Obviously, because that means she'd be 15, and that'd be really, really juvenile. That brings something else.
Julie Lewis.
Exactly, and that would also really make the character of Bob and Charlotte's relationship even more troublesome to a certain degree, which I'm going to talk about because I don't think it is troublesome at all. Bob has been married for 25 years, and that's when they talk about her doing philosophy, him being an actor, and the fact that both of them say that they wish they could sleep. Bob goes swimming, which is a sign of his age because he's trying to keep fit. Charlotte goes to a games arcade. None of the noise in that arcade is real. That's produced after the film. Presumably because it would have just been too noisy. We spent many a time.
You can imagine that Mama Bamba being in there, couldn't you?
Oh my God!
Having a while of a time.
Woody would be stuck in there. Yeah. We would never get the two of them.
That's all weird Japanese games. And the thing he just made me, makes you really want to go to Japan, didn't it, you?
It does, but there was one lad who was standing there who really pissed me off, and he's standing there with a fag in his mouth.
With a guitar. Playing guitar.
That's so cute, you know, cringy Japanese kind of kids kind of thing. But he is, again, it's another great film, another great scene, because it shows the two totally different people in a really good way. That's what I like about it. I'm sure that, now I might be wrong here, this is going to have to say that. I'm sure that swimming bath is the same swimming bath that Daniel Craig swims in for Bond. I'm sure it is. I could be wrong, but I think it is. It's Charlotte who, when in the bar, it's Charlotte who goes over to Bob. That's what I like about this as well, which is another sign of she's taking the first route of I wanted somebody else to talk to. And Bob, because Bob won't. And I like that. If it was the other way around, I think it would have been a bit, you know, kind of like promiscuous. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so as well, because I think, right, the way she's looking at him and he's looking at her in there, it's not sexual chemistry.
No.
Or even chatting them up. It's sort of they're both meets, that now they're gays, both meets, and they're both sort of kindred spirits, aren't they, together? Without the, you know, like I said, I think like a lot of this film, it's about the wonders of the platonic friend, about platonic friendship with a female. Yeah. That Harry Met Sally, that famous scene, is you know, about men can only be women. The one is bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a lot of people still believe in that. As if a generation above us believe that's the only reason men and women are together, aren't they?
I think you're absolutely right. And this scene as well, where the fact that it could easily have been turned into a film where he's sort of like giving her the wink and, hey, come on over, you know what I mean? It is not. It is purely sort of like, hi, how are you? I've been in many a time when I've talked to somebody at the bar in not any kind of chatting up kind of way. It's perfect. And I've got loads of friends who I'm very, very close to who are females who, you know, they are just friends. I think it's because it's our generation. We're a bit more of a liberal, kind of open generation. Yeah, yeah. You're right. People who are older than us can't understand how why are you friendly? Come on, you must really fancy her. Well, no, because that means then you're saying to me that every woman must fancy a bloke then.
Yeah.
I mean, it works both ways. It works both ways.
Of course it does.
But because I suppose the male thing is we're meant to be more predatory in that aspect. Let's face it, I mean, you couldn't be the worst kind of predatory people in the world ever. Do you know what I mean? It's just so true. But again, that connection. And this Bob who turns around and says, I'm coming up with a plan to escape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you want in? And she says, yeah. But they don't. That's the great thing about that. They don't. He's suggesting, how about we escape this place? And he's all said in jest. Now, that could easily, you could easily then cut to them going off. They don't. She goes back to Taiwan. He goes back. And that is why I absolutely love that kind of thing. Again, we see her in the Overtaker. There's a bit of an awkward meeting by the pool, which I quite like, because they're both in dressing gowns. And that is really well shot. Because normally, if Bob was younger, right, this is where the whole thing wouldn't work.
No,
because Bob would then be going, you're a very attractive young woman, and you're in a dressing gown.
Yeah, and as well, the point is, if he would have been younger, he would have been successful. Because the point is, he's not successful. He's not successful as an actor anymore, is he? He's a washed up actor, isn't he?
I wouldn't say he's a washed up actor. His acting thing is definitely on the way down. I wouldn't say he's washed up, because he wouldn't be being offered $2 million for an episode. So I mean, I think that's the reason why we suddenly work out the fact that he's not, I suppose, like every kind of actor, and I suppose even worse as well, when in Hollywood, where I think Helen Mirren's always said this, and Glenn Close has, and where it's like, you know, the older you get as a female actor, it's harder to get roles, because apparently they're not, you know, an older actress is important. I think it's more important. There's more story in older people than it is that. With male actors, you either go one way, you either try the old dyeing your hair, which clearly Bill Murray has dyed his hair in his film, because it's quite grey at this point. And he does, it's obvious though as well. It's not kind of like, you know, well done. Or you do the George Clooney kind of thing, do you know what I mean? Or the James Stewart kind of thing, you know, you just go with the flow.
Yeah, and the thing with him as well, I think he was like an action film star, wasn't he? Because you see that clip, he was like an action film as well.
Which,
if you're old, is a weird thing, isn't it? You don't get it with females. A lot of action, you know, can be 65 and still in an action film, a la like Denzel Washington, isn't it?
Well, I think
he's 65 and he's still playing action roles. This is very weird.
But But I think there's a difference between a Denzel being an action hero, because I was watching Equalizer 2 again the other day. I mean, although I'm a massive Equalizer fan with Wee Wah Woo Wah, I think they're different kind of films, but they work really well. I think it's really well done. And he doesn't do an awful lot. And when the action films that I do have problems with is the likes of Sylvester Stallone doing the last Rambo one, also Harrison Ford doing Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah.
You're telling me somebody who is 75 years old, right, he's going to be able to pull off something. Of course they're not. So he's got to be really well wrote. Yet the Denzel one, he's using his mind, you know. He's sort of like, well, look, boys, I can slap you pretty hard just by standing there. Do you know what I mean? He's also doing martial arts skills, so I think he can get away with that. What I like about this, the fact that Bob's an action hero, but it takes you away from us thinking it's Bill Murray. That's what I like about that. Because it'd be very easy to think that this is Bill Murray playing Bill Murray when it's not.
I think it's the most film. He hasn't played Bill Murray in it.
Well, this film is his favourite film of all the films he's done. I love the fact that you're getting playing golf. That must be in his contract.
Yeah. He says,
I will do this film if I could play golf. Quick note here about Bill Murray. Bill Murray has an 0800 number, right, in Hollywood. No one has his number. He doesn't have an agent anymore. Right? He will only do a film if he wants. He likes the sound of the film. Two, he likes the script. He will not allow anyone to do it. And Sophia Coppola apparently phoned him up some like 30-odd times trying to get his attention. And it was the guy who, the director who did the Royal Tenenbaums.
Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson turned around and said to Sophia Coppola, if he agrees, he'll do it. He's a man of his word. And he said, he phoned her back and said, yep, I'll do it. But there was no contract. There was no handshakes or like that. It was a verbal agreement. She started filming in Tokyo and he wasn't there. He hadn't turned up.
What?
And she was filming. And she turned around to Wes, got in touch with Wes Anderson, because I don't think he's going to do it. Because he will. If he said he's going to do it, he will turn up. And he flew himself there.
Yeah.
And then just did the film. That's what he's like. I quite like that. It's a bit like the Daniel Day-Lewis hiding out in the mountains making clogs.
Yeah.
I don't know if he does do
it. Really. See, that's the funny thing about Bill Murray. He's not Hollywood, is he?
No, he's not. No, and I quite like that. I really do. Going back into it. Blah, 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 blah. Charlotte turns around and says, do you want to go out with some friends? And Bob turns up in his ridiculous shirt and she turns around and says, you really are having a midlife crisis. Why doesn't he just go back to his hotel room and change his shirt instead of turning it inside out and putting the light off?
I don't know.
Is that a trust thing again?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think he's a bit... I think it's maybe it's a generational thing as well, that he doesn't want to stand out. But this bit is my favourite part of the film, this night out.
Well, why is that then?
I don't know, because it's the wonders of alcohol... It is that when you go out and when you get really drunk, you have such an adventure. And it doesn't happen as much when you get older, because everything's sort of the same, isn't it? But when you're young, or when you're first going to a new city, you can have such a wild time. I love it, the way they're doing the karaoke, the way they're all doing Sex Pistols and these properly singing. I like the way they're in that bar and they're having and they cause trouble in the bar and they're being chased down the road by that bloke shooting that weird plastic gun.
It's like a little BB gun with plastic.
Yeah. They're just running wild at the grid of filmmaking. I just love that. It's like that wild abandon, and they're both having such a brilliant time together. But then again, just as two friends, together.
Yeah, because there's so many. I mean, when they go back to the house, and they're all sitting there and they're all laughing and joking, and there's a guy who goes up and tries to chat Charlotte up a little bit, and she's got that wonderful pink wig on as well, which is amazing. And there's a bit where they're sitting outside, and I think Charlotte's sitting out on in a hallway, I think, and Bob comes out and he just sits next to her, and she just puts her head on his shoulders. It's just a nice shot, that is. And then a little bit later on, I've done all that, but they're in the same bed. And what is good about that is that there's a serious innocence about that. Bob is lying on the bed with his clothes on, and Charlotte's just lying on her side in a fetal position, which again is mimicking the shot at the beginning of the film. And it's saying, look, it's still innocent. It's still innocent. Now, you could think that, would you feel comfortable being an older man in a bed with a 23? Well, probably wouldn't, to a certain degree. But it's not meant to be us thinking in reality. I mean, we wouldn't feel comfortable at all because we're married and all this. Do you know what I mean? But there could be opportunities that happens. And you think, well, it's just purely innocent. And that's what it is. And nothing is shown. Now, a lot of people have wondered about this, whether their relationship becomes, or at the moment, is it starting to become a close relationship, or do you think it's a relationship like a father and daughter?
Or even like a brother and sister. I forgive him like a brother and a sister.
An older brother and sister, yeah.
Yeah, he's like looking after her, because there's times when he could.
I think it's a vice versa. I think she's looking after him, because she's the one who takes him out. Just having a little time to go around. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a little bit of the elder brother thing at the end bit of that bit, but I think she's the one leading him amok. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Saying, look, this is what it could be, and he actually feels alive a bit. And when he goes back to the hotel, he phones his wife, whether that's out of guilt because I shouldn't really be going out, or just because the fact that he wants to, and she's just not really interested in the kids, don't want to talk to him.
You
can see that he's lost in his own life, really, which I think is quite... Yeah.
I think the only thing that goes against that is the only little bit is when he does, when he sleeps with the singer and she finds out that he's been with her.
Yeah.
She's a bit offish with him at the beginning, at the breakfast, isn't she?
When they go for the sushi.
There's a brief little bit where they have a dig at each other, isn't there?
Yeah.
Because she makes a joke about, oh, she's more like your own age. You can talk about the 50s. And then he says something like, oh, wow, yeah, but you're just a little girl who don't know your place in the world. But then it sort of snaps back, doesn't it? There's that one little bit when I was talking about people saying that that's the thing that shows there's more to it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it is. I think she's just disappointed in him.
I think you're right. I mean, there's a bit, I think just before that, I'm not too sure, where Dalina, they go with like their friends, Dalina strip club, and Bob's sitting there very awkward. And then Charlotte walks in and he goes, do you want a drink? And she goes, no, I think we should just go. And I think he says, like, well, let's leave and we'll never talk about that again. I think you're right. I think there is a bit of upset, like, you know, a little bit of disappointment in it, because I suppose she thinks it's a bit like your dad, kind of like, you know, as you said, that could be the father-daughter kind of thing at that point, or the elder brother kind of thing, where it's like, well, you could do better. Well, he couldn't do bad because he's married for a start.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You've got. I think I did make a note. Oh, one thing I did. I laughed so loud about it was when Bob's having a shave, and he's got that little razor.
Because
you can imagine it just be, and the shower being really small. You'd be fine. But I mean, it's like, I've had, you know, when you go to a place and it's like a really small shower cube, it's like bloody hell. That's
what I said. Bill Murray's actually quite tall, isn't he?
You wouldn't think it, would you? But
he's a tall bloke.
Now, there's a bit in there where Bob goes on that crazy talk show. And the only reason why he agrees to that is because of the fact that he actually does get to spend a little bit more time in Japan. That's because he's had such a good time on the night out. I think this is all to do with, this is actually happens before he sleeps with the singer. So he's had a great time in Japan. And he thinks, well, do I need to go home and start talking about carpets in the study? Or do or do that. Now, he goes to that crazy talk show thing. First time ever you see someone doing the heart-shaped thing. Everyone does that heart-shaped thing these days, don't they? Which is a bit annoying. But it does it on there. He has that arsey chair thing. Now, if in the sauna, you get them two German guys. I've got the translation here for what the German chap says.
Oh, right.
Okay, so I'll read to you. This is the Germans in the sauna. At first, I was really happy. I thought at the beginning, yes. In Germany, I was looking forward to it, but in the meantime, now, something German. After this, we'll go out and get something German to eat. And that's what they say.
Bloody hell.
So, as you say, Bob seems to be the thing. I do admit, right, there is that thing of when the fire alarm goes off, that's the time that they get to talk to each other again, don't they? And they say, we'll never mention this again. I am totally in agreement, right? Why would you go to a restaurant? I've done this. I think you have as well. Where they give you raw food to cook.
That's a sashimi thing in Japan. That's really where. But there's places like that do that here now, isn't there?
There's a place called On the Rocks where they do. I went to one in Portsmouth where you get given a steak and you throw it on there. And I'm there going, but I do this at home. Yeah. I went to a Korean restaurant in Vegas and I was like, oh, no, it's one of these ones where you have to cook it. Actually, it turned out to be really good because it was about $10 for something that would cost you $70 over here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
I am of the thing, if you know, I can cook very well. Well, moderately well. The last thing I want to do is when I go to a restaurant is I have to cook my own food. I want someone to do that for me. Thanks very much. Now, this is where they say the goodbyes. I love the goodbyes in the hotel. I love this scene because it's sort of like we've all done it. You know, you have a night out and you've got all the people. Sometimes you don't see them like our podcasters meet up and stuff like that. I prefer to say good night, goodbyes on the night when you're all slightly pissed and not see anybody in the morning.
Oh, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, because you see everyone in the morning, you go, hey, I just want to go home. And I think you get that with both of them. Bob's kind of like saying, you know, I've had a great time. Don't really want to leave you because it's good fun. And she says the same, but she just goes into the lift and goes.
Yeah.
And I like that. I love that bit. Now, this is the thing then where you see Bob's in the taxi. He goes off. Somehow, I don't know how this happens. Charlotte's in the street.
Yeah.
He's in the hotel. For some reason, he sees her and they hug and they whisper. And they say goodbye. In the script, it says that they do say something. Now, what I know what they say. A lot of people don't, as Lucy says, right? What do you think, or you'd like to think, that Bob says to her at the end?
Now, in my head,
it's in the whole of the film.
You know, it'll be okay in the end. You just got to get through this hard stuff. That's what I think about. You'll be okay in the end. You know, life's a long thing. You know, you're still young. That's what my thing is like. You know, you've got to put it into perspective. You know, you've got a long way to go yet. What does he say then?
He says, I have to be leaving, but I won't let that come between us, okay? And she says, okay, back.
All right.
Now, again, that was not in the script. That was done ad hoc by Bill Murray. Okay. So you can look at that in two ways. Now, the only reason why I know that is somebody took the noise removal out the back of the soundtrack, boosted the sound of what they say. The trouble is with that is that you read what is being put up on the subtitles, and like a lot of these things, you end up then your brain listens for those words.
Yeah.
Not 100% that is true, so let's just get that out of the way. That could be deemed of two different things. One thing, he wants to see her again.
Yeah.
Could be, because I've had such a good time. Or it could be meaning of something like, look, you know, we should catch up again. I think it's more the fact that, let's look out for each other.
Yeah.
I think it's more that. I think it's still more the, look, if you need me, I'm at the end of a phone. And I'd like to have a chat with you. We'll catch up again with each other. And people say that on holiday. When you go on holiday, me and you have done this before many a times. We've met people on our holidays.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we should stay in touch. You know, he's our number. You never, ever do. Because on holiday, it's different. You're carefree. You've got a great time. And when you come back, you're back to normal. And things aren't on holiday when you're at home. And I think that's what that scene's all about.
It's a beautiful scene, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
But he's doing it to me. It's fatherly, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So why he brings her into his chest? It's like a father, isn't it? He ain't hugging her round the wax. So it's like a big hug about it, isn't he? And because she's upset, because she's lost him now.
Yeah.
Because she's still stuck there and her husband's bugging off somewhere, isn't he?
And you don't know what he's really up to. Do you know what I mean?
Because there's a bit with her and the actress, isn't that?
Yeah, because he turns around and says, oh, I'm just going to go down and have a drink with Kelly. And she goes, oh, yeah, I'll come with you. And he goes, you want to come?
Yeah.
And he's kind of thinking, well, you know, that's a bit awkward. Or it could just be the fact that he just wants to have an open chat. Who knows? You know.
All right, yeah.
But I love the fact it's left open. And I think it still stands up today as an absolute corker of a movie.
Oh,
it really is. And it was such a pleasure to be able to watch it on TV. I think, was it on Amazon? It's on Amazon, isn't it?
Is that? Yeah, it is on Amazon.
Free to watch. So if anyone's got Amazon Prime, you can...
Who hasn't seen it? Give it a go, because I'd say don't expect loads happening. It's not about that. It's not about narrative. It's about people just together in a... Like all the great films, put two good people, two good actors together in a circumstance, you'll get a good film.
Exactly, yeah. I think as well, I mean, so especially for Grant, who the film was really lost on him, it'd be interesting to see if he, after listening to this, and if he watches it again, if he's a bit more enlightened in it. I'd love to know what he says.
Yeah, definitely.
About it. Again, though, I think it's definitely a film where, I know, this is all good to say. How can I put it? This is a film where you shouldn't be looking at your phone.
No.
You know what I mean? There's too much subtlety going on in the background and in the film. There's only two people in this film. And it needs to be watched without looking back. Yeah, there's some films we put on because it's noise film in the background. You know what I mean? Transformers, for fucking instance. That is a lot better than not watching the film. But I think there's a you definitely don't watch your phone a bit.
Yeah.
One thing I want to ask about you, now that we've done the film, is have you listened to that podcast that you recommended to me the other day?
I am doing it today. That's my thing today.
So it's a three-hour podcast. I got a quarter of the way through when we was at work on Thursday, and I don't want to listen to any more. I want to listen to it at work because I was thoroughly enjoying it. The worst thing is that Rolling Thunder is not available to watch on Amazon or Netflix. You have to buy it. So I've been trying to find out where I can buy it from. And it's £25.
Yeah. And I can say as well, Meds, it's a really good film, but you've got to put it into perspective. It's a Tarantino love film, so it's very shoddy.
Yeah. Well, it's sleazy.
Sleazy, but it's got some amazingly cool stuff in it.
One for the family, eh?
Well, it's got an amazing whorehouse shootout, and he has a metal hook for a hand in it by the end of the film. So that's all you need to know.
that sounds good to me. Well, then, mate, so next month we'll be doing... I was just pointing out, sorry that this is a February episode, not a January one. We had technical issues, and it was just all over the place. So we'll be back.
Thing to interrupt.
Hello, sorry?
I've got a fact.
Oh, sorry, dude. Hit me with the facts. This is good. I love a fact.
Number one fact. You're going to act like you're surprised. You always told me. It's a very good fact. But anyway.
I've got memory loss. I can't remember what I did yesterday.
Anyway, when Sofia Coppola was a little girl, she used to follow her dad round, right? This is where a lot of this thing come from. She got the idea from. And when she was like 9, she went for a meal in Tokyo. And at that meal was Federico Fellini and Kurosaka. Now, the two films they've done are La Dolce Vita and Yojimbo. They're the two films that have featured on the black and white TV, innit?
Oh, that's a nice nod to them.
And you know, she said, everyone said, "Oh, that was amazing." She was bored out of her brain.
Oh.
Now imagine that for a meal, Francis Ford Coppola, Fellini and Kurosaka in having a meal together, and you're bored.
You're bored.
You would be when you're 9 now, wouldn't you?
You would be. I remember a story our mate at work, Steve at work told me that he had his music teacher was really good friends with the guitarist and composer John Williams, not the Star Trek guy, but the composer. And you know, he did Katatana, the theme to Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
He performed it in front of them, and they took the piss out of him.
Because
he does a thing where he does his lips when he's playing, like concentrating, and they kept giggling at him.
Amazing.
He says later, when he knew who that person was, he just thought, oh my God, a personal audience with him. But when you're young, you don't, we never had anything like that at school, did we?
Not at our school. There was no people.
There was no famous people coming in our school. They weren't allowed through the prison.
There were some teachers, but they were famous for other things, and that's something you didn't want to watch. You know what I'm on about then.
Their favourite program, the gym will fix it, so that says something. All right then, dude. Well, thanks for pitching in as usual. And all that. I don't know why I said that for. We've been doing a show together for fucking 5 years. You know what I mean. And we'll be back next month for The Lady Killers.
Wicked. And goodbye, all listeners.
Take care, stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Waffle On. If you'd like to get in touch or join the mailing list, you can by emailing the guys at waffleonpodcast@gmail.com. You can also have some waffly fun by joining their Facebook page. Simply type in Waffle On Podcast in the search bar, and away you go. This has been a Waffle On production. Copyright Simon Meddings and Mark C. Kelly.
And girls, so Bob Harris, tell me about the arrival of punk then, because that did not sit at all easily with you. It's true, is it, that you got in a proper dust-up with the Sex Pistols?
Yeah, and there's always been a kind of misinterpretation of this, because at the time, Whistle Test was an album programme, and you had to have an LP out to appear on the show. Punk and New Wave exploded on singles that we weren't playing on the programme. Plus, I mean, if you're a young kid coming through and you're seeing this guy on Whistle Test, who's now 30 years old, long hair, hippie, white, middle-class, stadium rock-loving. I represented to them everything that they were trying to break away from and despised. And so this all then eventually it reached a moment where a friend of mine, George Nicholson, a recording engineer, and I called into a place called the Speakeasy in central London. And it was the day that the Sex Pistols had signed their contract. And they'd been down at the A&M offices during the day, fueling up is probably the best way for it. When we arrived at the Speakeasy about 10 o'clock, I don't know who it was. It was a guy taller than me in a green boiler suit. That's what I remember of it.
Right.
But somebody came over to me and said, when are the Sex Pistols going to be on Whistle Test? And I said, well, give us a call in the office. And it didn't matter what I said. He took this haymaker swing at me, and all hell broke loose. George and I got separated, and I got pulled around the other side of the bar, and I had my back against a wall with half a dozen, eight, nine people coming towards me with broken bottles and broken glasses and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is it. I really thought that I was going to be badly damaged in the experience of this. Symbolically, a group of people got in between them and me, and it turned out to be the Procol Harum road crew. I mean, it's just the perfect snapshot.
You couldn't make it up.
I know. So they surrounded me and got me out of the building. And people ever since have said, oh, Bob Harris hated punk. Well, no, I didn't. But it's hard to remain objective when what's happening to you is everywhere you go now, there's an element of violence being directed towards you. It's not an easy thing to cope with.
Yeah. No Sex Pistols on your list, we should note. Let's hear another piece of music then, Bob Harris. Tell me about this. It's your sixth track of the morning.